You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, Fairfield, Iowa.
This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple, and my co-host is Alan Cobb. And our guest today is Mike Rutherford. Mike is part of our Icon Invitational show. I've selected six artists from the region to feature at Icon. And I've been wanting to show Mike's work for a very long time. We've been dialoguing about his work for some time. He used to come up to the old gallery and we'd talk, and I'd look at his work, and I've watched it grow, and I've watched an accumulation of some unbelievably beautiful pieces, and I was able to include him in this group show with a pretty extensive area that shows off what he's been doing in his little studio, which is just a little portion of his house, and I'm amazed that he's made such incredibly beautiful minimalist works in the little corner of his house. The other inspirational thing is that you're one of the most knowledgeable people in town, in the region, about art and art history, and yet you're completely self-educated. You didn't go to the university and memorize a bunch of things. You actually had a desire to know what art was, what the history of art was all about, and you studied, and now you're one of the most well-educated people in the field of art in the region, and that's just inspiring to me because it's all self-driven. It's such a better education. And then you've came to people like me and others, and you've dialogued and back and forth and networked to bounce the ideas that you've been studying off of actual other working artists, and you've become a player in the region. And I laud you for everything you've done.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate that.
And it's nice to have you come on the radio and talk about your work. Have you been interested in art all your life? Or is this something that just sort of kind of like hit you?
When I was in high school, we would have study hall at the library like a lot of school kids do. They had Art News magazine there, picked it up, nothing else to read in study hall but Art News, and so I'd read it every study hall, and kind of got into it, and had art classes in school, and really got into those. When I was in the military, I was stationed at Fort Worth, Texas, and at Carswell Air Force Base, which is now a Naval Reserve Station. It got sold by the Air Force to the Navy. Anyway, my job was 9 to 5. High stress. It was really high stress. Decided to do something on the weekends, and I got a job at the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth as a guard. I was a guard there, part-time on weekends mostly, for about 2 years. And wow, what an eye-opener that was. It was like an insider's view of the art world and what goes on at a museum behind the scenes. And actually got to meet, you know, some artists there that are now world players in art. It was really quite a time. I just have to pinch myself when I think of, you know, all that I, you know, experience.
And that is
there.
A very major museum in Fort Worth.
Yeah. And it was, you know, it was a learning experience, you know, to see, you know, how much work goes into running a museum, all the different parts that are involved, all the different positions from the curator to the director to even just the board members, but especially the board members. They really run the show at a museum. And it was a real learning experience, but very eye-opening at the same time.
So you were exposed to the, you know, the full range of of art history and contemporary art. It's the Modern Art Museum, so it was mostly contemporary art, but what's going on today is really quite far reaching. And so you actually got an entryway into, you know, going deeper into art from the expanded level that it's come to today, which is we call pluralism, which means anything is going on out there. So to get a taste of that and then to move backwards through the history of art and figure out what it's really all about from there, it's an interesting angle because most people go the other way.
Yeah. And many of the other guards that were there were artists, working artists too. Right. And at lunch break, we would talk about art, you know, because there we were, you know. And it was interesting, you know, finding out the narrative and the career path that people were coming from and headed toward. And just the whole experience of being there from the viewpoint of a guard, you know, one of the very basic jobs there, and experiencing that aspect of things, you know, the security aspect, but also just experiencing the art. There are many days where if it was an off day and the museum wasn't very busy, bad weather, for instance, sometimes people wouldn't come out. You would just have the whole room to yourself and just stand there and watch the art. And the only challenge was getting sore feet, so you just walk around a little bit. But, you know, it was really something. And to watch other people's experiences as they experienced the art, that was pretty valuable too, just to see human nature at work. Some people would be in awe, some people would be disgusted, and some people would have little accidents where they would bump into something or have some perceptual problems because of whatever piece of art they're watching, you know.
So now it makes my first encounters with you make a little more sense. I mean, I knew this story, but when you came up to the old gallery and started showing me works and started talking about work in a very sophisticated way, someone who's had the experience that you've just described. And yet you told me you grew up in Packwood and you live in Packwood, just out of town, and it's just not usual that somebody comes from a little town outside of Fairfield and has this level of knowledge and expertise and producing really refined and subtle objects without, you know, having gone off to Paris or New York or studied at the university and then come back. So that was a little bit of a surprise to me, and it was a delight actually for me. Now it makes more sense, the background story. You have kind of brought two bodies of work, and I sort of think of what you do in kind of two veins. There's the very sophisticated and minimalist work informed by modernism. And then there's a folk-inspired work. Do you want to talk a little bit about the two bodies of work?
Yeah, I work in two different ways. One body of work represents being the fact that I'm being influenced by folk sources. By folk sources, I mean sources that are out there in the everyday world, such as the folk and blues music that I listen to on the radio at times, and also the different types of folk art that are out there, folk art, tribal art, that's outside of the institutional mainstream of that type of art, you know, the very, very fine institutionalized taste type of art. And then I've got a more formal series where I'm using, you know, those more formal elements of art and exercising, you know, trying to exercise what I've learned in that vein. And I like the idea of presenting both at simultaneously with each other to, you know, compare and contrast them and see what they do with each other visually. And I found that just sticking with one or the other just wasn't enough. And that when I try to hybridize the sources, because I'm out there looking at a lot of different sources for my work to inform my work, when I combine different sources, that's when I come up with stuff that I think is interesting to myself and is resulting in work that is different from one another's works, from anyone else's. But what I'm really after is work that satisfies me. And if it doesn't satisfy me, I just don't feel right about it.
Well, for the audience listening and not looking, because they're not in the gallery where they're listening to the radio, let's describe your work a little bit, because it's different. And what we're talking about is strips of canvas with paint on, little strips hung on the wall, and this show is mostly about the type of work we'll be describing now. There's another series that I plan to show in the future that we'll talk about more in the future, unless we might just come in. We don't know what we'll talk about here. But right now we're showing at the gallery vertical strips, maybe hanging off a nail, and the nail is part of the piece. There's nothing about one of these pieces that isn't part of the piece. That is the shadow. The back of a little strip of canvas might be painted red, and so we get a red reflection off the wall. The wall itself and how the wall is enlivened is part of the piece. Everything that this little simple thing, people will walk in and say, oh, that's not art, because it's a strip of canvas. So they haven't been initiated into the art experience, where we realize that that little strip of canvas is enlivening the entire space in the room. The wall becomes an infinite space. It isn't a wall anymore. And then there's light and color and form happening around the piece on the wall. The piece itself is lit in different ways, and the light itself is part of the piece. Everything is part of the aesthetic experience that he's creating. And I love the experience that I get off your work. So just say a few things about it.
Let me just interrupt long enough for you to tell our listeners what the show dates are.
The show dates are, it's already open, so the show will be open through January 21st, 2011.
That's probably 2012.
Oh, we're in 2011 right now.
Yeah.
If everyone is listening to the show live, I mean, as it happens, you know, now. If you're listening in 2013, you've missed it because we repeat these shows. All right. The show runs through January 21st, 2012. And for those who just tuned in, we're interviewing, Alan and I are interviewing Michael Rutherford, who's showing at Icon Gallery right now and part of our 2011 Icon Invitational. All right, so what I want you to describe a little bit how what's involved with the pieces and what goes on in your mind a little bit as you're making them, what the studio experience might be like. He's taking pieces of strips of canvas, putting some paint on, stapling them together with a staple gun, and the staple is just a beautiful element. I mean, I just love them.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that. The Folk Spoken series that I'm currently working a lot in, and that's up right now at Icon, it comes out of being all tore up with painting. Being so frustrated with confining myself just to the picture plane, you know, those little squares that we just find ourselves painting on because either the institution or the art suppliers out there want us to paint on. And history, it's art history itself has been the history of painting anyway has been heavily about the picture plane. What I want to do is take canvas and paint and staples and other fastening systems and do other things with them and get the painting to operate in a space that's outside the picture plane, to get the painting to interact and pull in the space that's around it, the walls, even the ceiling, if we get a chance, using the fastening systems, bringing them, the nail or the staples, and bringing them out from behind the painting to the forefront, and use those as elements and embellishments, and doing riffs on the material itself, on painting itself, and the history of painting. And my challenge, I guess, to the viewers is that these canvas pieces that look really three-dimensional, I don't consider them to be sculptures at all. I consider them to be paintings, and I'm insisting that they're paintings. And that's my challenge to the viewer. And because I feel that when I looked at folk forms in folk art and forms that are in the institutionalized art, formal art, I got a lot of inspiration. And like I said, I was torn up by painting, so I immediately went to the opposite of institutionalized art. I started looking at ancient art, tribal art, especially African and Oceanic art, to try to draw some inspiration and to try to free myself up. And another thing that really helped my painting was a cross-discipline approach. I started looking at ceramics and how pottery was painted. And I had already known about Peter Volkas, the great ceramic potter who started the Otis group of potters in the 50s. And what he was doing with clay and was just amazing then. He really messed up pottery in such a good way with what he did. And so looking at his work really helped free up my painting. And just seeing how he applied glazes, how he threw things together, how he just chopped into his ceramic forms while they were still wet. And that was a freeing moment when I learned about Volkas.
Well, it's obvious that at some point you gave yourself permission to just explore anything in any way, and that nothing was outside of the game. And it was just, it was very obvious when that happened, and it was just like a eureka as a curator and as a teacher and all this. When I see this, it is like eureka. This guy has like broken free, and now he can discover beauty from its own essential nature. So that's very cool.
Thanks, Bill. Yeah, and the beauty that I see in some of the things that I'm making is when I see that rough cut canvas edge and I see those frayed threads that have paint soaked on them, and the misfired staple that wouldn't go in just right, and the paint that wouldn't lay down just right, that would pick up the brush marks and show that, you know, human activity occurred here. And I do, like you said, I gave myself permission with that folk spoken series and being so freed up with the canvas and all of its trappings. I feel like I've given myself permission to use the visual equivalent of the word ain't to come up with something else. Out of frustration and out of work comes other work. And I think other artists can often feel that way.
Well, you've obviously, it's so hard to talk about these things because we know them as artists, but if you're like not like drawn into it. And sort of my job in town and in the region is to draw people into this, seduce people into the aesthetic experience. So once you're deep in, it's a very rich place. So that's why art is so good. But what I'm saying is you're describing a kind of like love ecstasy experience of beauty. And how, you know, what's, as an art teacher and a curator and as the icon person in this town, I just like, that is the goal. And when I see someone who's deeply in love in the realm of beauty, it just is so good. And then your work contains that and describes it. So what we want to do is try to get the, open the audience up to be able to have the gift that you're trying to give them. And that's my job. Because if you come in and you just see a strip of canvas, well, you're losing what you, the gift that you have to give. So this thing of being able to see a strip of canvas hanging on a wall as a painting, which is what you described, it's to you, it's painting, it's a bit of an acquired skill. And so that it tells us a little bit that there's some something required from an audience in the realm of contemporary art that is not so much book learning, but opening up and allowing yourself to receive the gift.
There's a lot of things to think about when making a work of art or doing anything. It's a lot of things to consider. There's the history of painting that gets pulled in. The history of anything you're doing can enrich whatever you're doing, I've always felt. And I've always looked at innovators in music too, such as Paul McCartney, how he, in some of his songs, he pulled in even old ragtime piano riffs, especially with songs like Rocky Raccoon and Lady Madonna. You get this rich ragtime piano that's just peeling into the song. And so he's pulling from all types of sources musically. And I think it's important for artists to do that visually and look at art history and pull in sources from a visual standpoint. To help keep progressing and keep pushing whatever medium that you're working in to other areas, you know, that it might not have gotten to yet.
And we're just exploring those many sets of eyes that have experienced the world in so many different ways. So if you just see one kind of painting, you've just got one kind of one-dimensional take on what art is. But the more you study art and art history and look at paintings and go to museums, you have this rich backlog of many different ways of seeing, and then you have all of that to draw on in your own work, and this is what you're talking about.
Yeah, one of my pieces that's currently up right now is called Big River, and it's a long, tall, thin black piece. It's a big hunk of black canvas that's been painted on with you know, heavy coats of paint, and I got the idea from that piece from hearing the song Big River by Johnny Cash, written in 1958. It's one of his lesser known songs, but to a lot of people it's his most poetic. And I just, when I heard that song, and the song, the first part of the lyrics goes, I met her accidentally in St. Paul, Minnesota, and it tore me up every time I heard her drawl, southern drawl. Then I heard my dream went back downstream, cavorting in Davenport. Well, being an Iowan, I was quickly drawn to the fact that, well, here's an Iowa town mentioned. Anyway, Johnny follows this gal all the way down and goes through St. Louis, Memphis, and then Baton Rouge. And he talks about how he dumped his blues out in the Gulf, and I just thought, gee whiz, that's poetry, and that is something I want to, that inspired me to make a painting So that's where that comes from. You know, when you pull in sources, you know, from outside of painting, you know, I think it's important to look at sources from your own medium, but to just pull in sources from other places, I found that it's just so enriching. And it threw me for a loop. I never thought I'd do a painting about a Johnny Cash song.
I love it. It's a great story. It also says where art comes from. It talks about where art comes from. Art comes from a poetic experience deep inside. And that poetic experience could find expression as a song or a poem or a dance or a visual art piece. And it can all contain that same seed of that deep experience in our souls. And so the talking about one kind of feeling in the context of two different or three different art forms is so interesting. And then to have one art form stir it inside of you so that you're drawn to do a visual art piece that is absolutely abstract. No one would actually think Big River, that song or that story by looking at the piece. Only when you told me it was called Big River, and I didn't remember the story, but I knew it, I thought, whoa, what a great name for that piece. Because one of the things about your work is that the names are integral to the works. And in many cases, I think people shouldn't name works of art. They should just be untitled, unless the name itself is a piece of poetry that describes the seed as well as the work, and then they go together and make an even greater experience. So that's true of your work. And I loved that when I first heard that piece was called Big River.
Oh, thanks.
It was perfect. But almost all of your names are just like right on. So we want to thank you. Our time is up. It was so nice for you to come and be in the studio and talk to us about your show.
Thanks,
Bill. This is Michael Rutherford, who's showing at Icon Gallery through the 21st of January 2012.
Thanks again, Bill.
You're welcome.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.